Hello, everyone. Welcome back. It is our world-famous podcast, yet another episode of The Philosopher is Stoned, with me, Jordan Strauss, and he, Sam Laboon. I'm just doing it for you.
That's what the professionals do. They say, yes. This is, George Redenbacher for Carl, whatever. I don't fucking know.
Well, we're off to a great start, everybody. What's going on?
When they sign off on the news, they're like, okay, let's move on.
Oh, you mean when they're filling in for someone?
No, they like if there's two anchors, right, and they're both talking. Yeah. At the end, one of them will say, he'll say his name or her name. This is so-and-so for, and then the other person's name, have a good night. And then the other person doesn't say goodbye as well.
Oh, well, yeah. Man, it's probably been, over 10 years since I've seen the end of any like news shows that I see with anchors and stuff. I just see clips of on social media. I don't think I can't remember the last time I sat and watched the actual show.
No. I don't think I ever did in my life. I only listen to radio news. So that might be a
radio news.
Yeah. Growing up, it was always the radio in Massachusetts, NPR.
NPR, which is the National People's Committee.
Yep, that's what NPR stands for.
What is it?
National Public Radio.
Right.
Yeah.
And it also has a reputation for being boring, doesn't it? I've heard that it used in reference as something really boring.
Maybe. I always thought it was super interesting. I loved it. They had great programs, great news, car talk, car repair show, great show.
Really?
Oh my God. Car talk is legendary.
Really?
Oh my God. Don't drive like my brother and don't drive like my brother. They were two brothers.
Ah, yeah. Very funny. And they just talked about engines or vehicles.
No, they were like a call in auto repair show. So people would call in and be like, there's a clunk whenever I turn right and stuff like that.
Oh my God. Yeah. The best way to diagnose your mechanics is over the phone.
they were pretty good.
That's good stuff. NPR, check them out. Just shout out for NPR. I'm sure they're shouting out our podcast all the time.
Yeah, they're weird though, because a lot of the anchors from when I was a kid, or like a lot of the hosts for the programs, are still the hosts today, and they're ancient.
What?
I know. Oh, it's God. Like, come on. Let someone.
Whatever happened to retiring? Like, I thought, like, get the 60. I thought everybody was supposed to be shit. Like,
seriously.
Sitting at home doing fuck all at 60. That was the goal. Was it not?
And that was the goal. And that's what, like, our whole society is based on. But now, because people live longer, they're like, oh, well, maybe you could keep working for a bit.
I guess, I also suspect that people don't like being retired as much as they think they would.
Yeah, that's a good question.
Especially like certain personality types were like, well, especially if you didn't have any hobbies or anything before, right? If your job was basically your whole life, like you'd go to work, come home and then relax and you never picked up hobbies. Like, I feel like you would just feel like you would have no idea what to do with yourself.
Yeah, that's true. I think
then
some
you become
people
become a Walmart greeter just to pass the time till death comes a knock. And
oh my God, yeah, yeah. Some people like they don't know what to do with themselves, because their work, their labor is, it's more than just a job. Like, it's their life.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. I feel like that happens a lot. Is people retire and then they regret retiring and then they unretire, or they have to go get a job doing something else just to like pass the time. Because I mean, I have hobbies I enjoy. Like, I like, you know, I don't really game anymore, but I play drums and I do comedy and I can go for a run here and there. But even if I did all those hobbies to how long I can do them in a day, I would still only be filling like not even half a day. So then it's like, I guess if you have grandkids, then you can go hang out with them, but lots of people don't live in the same city as their grandkids or their kids even.
Yeah. Yeah. It's true.
Or just never had kids in general. That's the one thing. Like, I totally understand the appeal of never having kids. But I don't know. I feel like when I hit a certain age, it'll be interesting to be able to watch your progeny go through life. I don't know.
Oh, that's fair. Yeah, like I'm seeing like my mom is retired, but she stays very busy, right? She's mm-hmm. got the dog, she's got the cat, she's got like some sort of course she'll be doing, like she did like a Spanish class.
Yeah, you got to do stuff like that. You got to keep that brain going.
Yeah, find stuff to keep the day alive.
Yeah.
But some people, they feel like if they don't have a job, then they don't, they feel like they need to have a job. Like you always need to have one. And it's not because they really love to do the work. It's, I think, that gives them a sense of security.
Sense of security and probably a sense of purpose, right?
Yeah, purpose in society, yeah.
Everybody likes to feel like they have been productive, even if they weren't, right?
Yeah, most people, yeah.
Some people. So, I mean, my grandpa's been retired for many, many years, and he's slowing down now because he, you know, he's got some health issues and he's damn near 90, but for my entire childhood, he was retired, basically, and he would just be out, like, building stuff, making, he would just be constantly outside upgrading his property.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, good for him, because if you don't use it, you lose it, I think.
Yeah.
When it comes to your body.
I mean, he still will show up and just start pulling weeds and stuff or doing like whatever. Like, he used to just build all these gardening units. Like, he's a pretty, like, he's like a jack of all trades type guy. So, like, house that we've moved into. That they've moved into, because they often would live in our same house with us, he would just upgrade the hell out of the house for years. That was his whole thing. I think that's why, is because he needed to feel like he got something done that day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But yeah, so even though he was retired, he wasn't like literally in the workforce.
No.
He wasn't like an employee.
No, he was before he retired, but after he retired, he was working just as many hours in the day, just not for a company or for money.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. 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 So now it's like the government has to provide social security for people as they age. And because people live longer, it costs more and more money to keep every generation cared for with social security after they retire.
So, are you advocating for a age limit?
Oh, like extending the age limit?
No, like everybody needs to die by this point in time, or else you become a drain on society.
Yeah, I'm getting there slowly. Like, yeah, we're going to process you into some sort of sludge that will then feed to the rest of us.
Everybody's goes on their 90th birthday. Everybody gets a fair shot to 90. And then after 90, you're done.
90 is a long time. If you make it to 90.
Congrats. Oh, man. If I make it to 70, I'll feel good. 60, really. I mean, I couldn't complain if I died today. Like, just how good my life has been compared to most people in the world.
You'll leave behind a widow with an unborn baby. That's pretty rough.
I mean, it's better than dying without those two things.
It's true. It's true.
I mean, not as far as like people being sad, but at least I have a bit of a legacy to leave behind.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, you'll be... who's like a fictional character who's born and his father's already dead and he really looks up to him?
I mean, that's like... That was a pretty big trope for a long time in a lot of like teen movies, like teen adventure movies, where you get sucked into a different world.
You die now, die today. Mm-hmm. Your child is raised to totally admire you.
Yeah.
And then you come back from the dead later when they're matured and mm-hmm. then they're ready for whatever secret mission you've devised.
That happens in the anime Naruto. So
okay, there you go. There you go.
I think that happens in anime quite a bit. I think that's a trope in anime. I mean, the dead father that he looks up to.
Oh, One Piece. Yeah, One Piece.
One Piece, Naruto. I mean, not Dragon Ball Z, but Goku does die like 5 times. I bet you if you did a search, an anime scan of how many animes start with the kid's parents being dead already, it's a lot.
Yeah. Here's a question. I think this is pretty common, but when you were in, Batman. When you were in like school or younger, like and bored in school, would you imagine like the school suddenly getting attacked by like Jedi or something, and they need you to join them?
Oh yeah,
yeah.
I mean, I would imagine more. Not really me needing to join them, but I would imagine any disruption that would get me out of class would become a fantasy.
Yeah,
I used to imagine a missile hitting the Shell station across the street,
whoa,
and then everybody having to get evacuated.
Yep. Nice.
But the idea of like a society upheaval to the point where it like collapses and now it's like rogue factions fighting for survival, that was very appealing to me as a young boy, you know?
Yeah.
It's like suddenly all your life's decisions are made for you. You live to fight the enemy. It's like, oh, that sounds pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah. I wonder why that is. Cause I would think that too. I would always imagine like, suddenly there would be like a battle or something and I would need to be recruited to join the elite exactly. strike force.
For whatever reason, I got chosen to be on the elite squad.
7-year-old kid.
It's just your instincts, kid. They're unmatched.
You have your midichlorian count. We've never seen it before.
I have some intangible that they get, but I don't understand yet. I mean, I think that's appealing to young boys and like early teens. Well, first is that you don't really have anything to lose that you're aware of, right? You have everything to gain, glory and a purpose. Yeah. You're also very naive to the realities of what war is like.
Yeah.
All
but
you
maybe
know
you
is
feel
what...
held. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Well, I mean, every depiction of war in young fantasy is like very cut and dry as far as like, you know, the bad guys are always going to be inferior in fighting skill.
Yeah.
You just imagine you're going to be like Legolas and the enemy is going to be the orcs and you can just chop them down by the dozens with
you're just going to keep score. Yeah. You and your friends are going to keep score. Yeah.
Yeah. They make it look fun. I mean, that's how they sold. That's how the propaganda sold World War One to everybody was it's going to be fun.
Yep. What was that book called? All Quiet on the Western Front. Yep.
You get to see Europe. You're going to have fun with your friends. You'll come back as a war hero. You're going to defend, and then you spend the next year of your life dying in a trench.
Yeah, yeah, like that that shot from All Quiet on the Western Front where they cut from like them in school like cheering to like they cut from them marching to war and then them marching back, and it's so different.
Yeah. Speaking of anime, my brother, shout out Joel, he's probably going to listen to this. He's been watching Attack on Titan for the first time. If you haven't seen it, Sam, there's a great spoiler alert, but it basically is right at the beginning, so it's not major spoilers. But they do the whole, all the friends are in military training and they're, you know, they're bonding, they're learning how to use their weapons, and they're like, they're overcoming the difficulties of like initially becoming soldiers, and they all become friends and they're like, no matter what, I got all your backs. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's like that very inspiring moment. And then the very next episode starts off with them all just charging into the battle for the first time, and then you just see most of them get completely fucked up and killed within like a minute. And it's such a hard left turn that it really, that's what got me hooked to the show when I first watched it, was that scene, because it was just very typical kind of anime up until that point where all these characters that you just got to know really well just get slaughtered in front of your face in horrific ways.
That's all. Yeah, I do remember that. That's great.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. Wow. I wonder if it'll never, that is like a thing. Like kids are always don't understand war.
Of course. But
even people who know
not
how
all
bad
kids,
it is.
I think lots of kids do, unfortunately.
Oh yeah.
I end up understanding the realities of war.
And they also grow up and some of them want to fight in wars too, even though they
I mean, if you think of like child soldiers in like Africa, they're all hopped up on drugs, right? So I don't even think they ever learn. I don't think they ever really get to be kids, first of all.
No.
You just become a drugged up war drone.
Yeah, it's just so unfortunate that it's like so easy. Because like, even as kids, we have these fantasies that we could be in a just war. Yeah. And it's just like so, it's so unfortunate that it's so easy to manipulate people into fighting in wars.
Yeah.
Even when they know how bad it is, you can always get people to do it. It's crazy.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of soldiers have a lot of regret when they're on the front lines. Like they think, wow, I should have done everything in my power to not end up here.
Yeah, if they're like in an actual war.
Speaking of wars, I've heard that Ukraine is now invading Russia.
No, well, actually,
are they just taking land back?
Well, Ukraine is Russia, so Russia is invading itself, technically.
Okay,
no, but I'm just kidding.
It's like, I don't think that's what they think.
No, yeah, they've made an incursion as of August 15th.
Wow.
Very, very small, microscopic, basically, in the grand scheme.
But still, it's embarrassing for Putin. It has to be.
It is, yeah.
I mean, it was already unbelievably embarrassing. And now he's whining that there's no outrage.
Well,
no global condemnation for the people invading us.
Yeah, it's, I mean,
oh my God, dude.
That's just a performance for the Russian people. So the average Russian person has no idea what's going on or thinks that the war is totally justified. And so, because their information is very controlled. But yeah, so that stuff, when he goes on there and he's like, no one's condemning it, that's just performing for the Russian people. So they can feel outraged.
He doesn't actually expect the rest of the world to like think that that's a legitimate.
No. Okay. Fuck no. Good. Fuck no. After that ends, he's like, "Oh, that was a good one. How'd that take go? Yep. Only the dead have seen the end of war." Who said that?
Well, I just hope I never have to end up in one. That's really the hope, is just get through life without ending up in a war.
Oh, I got to read my favorite war quote.
Okay.
It's from Return of the King, or no, is it Two Towers? Yeah, Two Towers. It's from the Two Towers. Faramir, right?
Yes.
Remember Faramir?
Wasn't he Boromir's brother?
He's Boromir's younger brother.
Yes.
Yes. And he was one of the rangers.
Mm-hmm.
And unlike his brother, Faramir is a very philosophical guy. And this is what Faramir said. So they had this battle with the Haradrim. Does that ring a bell?
No. Was this in the movies?
Yeah, it's in the books and the movies. So the Haradrim are the men of the south.
Oh, yes. So okay. That's when they like ambush them in the Elephants, right?
Yeah, they have the War Elephants, or the Oliphants, as they call them, the War Elephants.
Oliphants, right.
Yeah, and they're like an Indian Arab thing, right? So very pertinent, at least in, well, it was in the earlier time, but when we were fighting the Iraq War and everything. But here's the quote. So they're looking at a dead Haradrim.
Mm-hmm.
And Faramir says, "The enemy? His sense of duty was no less than yours, I deem. You wonder what his name is, where he came from, and if he was really evil at heart.
What I remember
lies,
that.
Yeah. What lies or threats led him on his long march from home? If he would not rather have stayed there in peace, war will make corpses of us all."
Well said, Faramir.
And then Faramir, does he die? No, he lives, right? I think he lives.
Does he
live? But Boromir dies.
Boromir dies.
Oh no, Faramir does die. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I think no, he lives. He lives.
Okay. All right. Tell me how does he live? Is he just at the end on that fight for?
He charges across the field in vain, right? His father, right? Classic. Right,
his father sent him to die, basically.
Yeah, this is like a commentary on World War I, where the general knows it's futile and sends you into battle anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so his whole unit gets wiped out, but his horse brings him back, and Gandalf saves him just before the Witch King gets him. And then they heal him up. And he's all better.
Good. Good stuff.
What was that place called?
Osgiliath.
That's what Gondor's, that's the big citadel? Osgiliath?
No, Osgiliath is the city that they're trying to recapture.
Right.
Yeah.
What was the big city called?
Minas Tirith.
Right. Minas Tirith.
Yeah.
Good stuff. Good stuff. Rings of Power 2, Season 2, coming out soon. Can't wait to see that shit.
Yeah. Apparently they fired the entire writing staff, so could be interesting.
They did?
Yeah. New writers.
For after Rings of Power 1?
Yeah. New writers.
So this could actually be good this time.
It could be good. Yes.
The trailer is not convincing.
I have almost no problems with anything other than the writing and like the story.
Well, that's a huge, huge problem.
I know. It's a huge, massive problem.
At least
it looked good. The show looked good.
I didn't think it looked that good. I think it looked... It's like the same thing I see with these new Star Wars show. It like lacks a certain grit. It's too polished.
Oh, I see what you mean. Yeah. It was a little too polished. Yeah. Yeah.
And the someone did a compare and contrast of the costumes for the Peter Jackson's Lord of the Rings and Ring of Power. And it really is like some of them look like they're made of craft foam. They spent years making some of those costumes in the original trilogy. And they look real. They look believable. These ones do look like they're cosplaying.
Yeah, in my opinion. It could use some work. I haven't watched it in a while, but yeah.
They got to dirty it up a little bit. They got to add some grit.
I think they were dirty when they were supposed to be dirty. But then when they weren't supposed to be dirty, they weren't maybe a little, should have been a little dirtier. I don't know.
No, it's not like.
Because when they were supposed to be dirty, they were like covered in shit and ash and stuff. Like they were pretty dirty.
I guess the word dirt might be the wrong word for what I'm trying to say.
Weathered, used. Yeah.
Heft. Weight.
Yeah.
Substance.
Yeah.
Right? Everything looked like it was cheaply made.
Yeah. Viggo Mortensen is a real sword, you can tell.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, yeah, you can just tell that they put a lot of effort in every meticulous detail.
It's
just trilogy.
It's never going to be the same.
No, it won't be. But it can be a lot better than what they gave us. That's for sure.
Yeah, it'll never look like it was shot on film with tons of practical effects because it wasn't.
Yeah,
it's done on digital with green screens because that's easier to control.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
And easier to make.
Yep. No one cares anymore. I've heard this discussion about a lot of films, but back in the day when you were filming on film, when that camera turns on, everyone knows that camera is eating money at an obscene rate, and you now have to dial it in because the camera is on. And you just don't have to deal with that with digital. It doesn't fucking matter how long the camera's on. The battery's
well, has that,
good to go.
And has the art form, has the craft suffered because of that lack of... the lack of weight to each take, because you can just take 1,000 takes.
I feel like it has a little bit. I feel like things are, I don't know. I feel like it has a bit.
I feel like it's brutally obvious to anyone that cares now that full CGI usually ends up looking like shit. You need to have practical effects mixed in. CGI should be enhancing the practical for the best outcome.
Yeah. Yeah,
otherwise, I mean, everything
you can't
is
beat
just
miniatures. Like Dune 2, you cannot beat the practical effects in that movie. They're so good.
That movie, like I could, this if there was CGI, it was undetectable for me.
Yeah.
Whereas
it's doing really well.
Now it's like even today, as good as CGI is, you can tell when it's CGI for the most part. Besides that movie, everything was so believable. I would not be able to tell you where the CGI ended and began.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very unfortunate. Well, what are we at here? Half an hour, almost half an hour.
Yeah. Do you have a lesson?
Should we talk some philosophy?
Yeah, we might as well.
Okay. Well, here I thought we could do a little bit of metaphysics today.
I love metaphysics. What? Metaphysics? Can't even talk.
Metaphysics, yeah. So today I found a cool new entry on the Plato.Stanford Encyclopedia website. And this entry has the very cool name of, what's it called? Form and Matter. And it's about Aristotle's theory of form and matter. What is it all made of? Everything.
Right.
Yeah. So you may remember there was a Greek philosopher named Thales. I can't remember. T-H-A-L-E-S.
Yeah.
Thales of Miletus, I think. Is that the city? Let me check. But he said everything was made of water. And Aristotle has a big innovation on Thales of Miletus's theory. Unlike Aristotle, or at least it seems like he has a big innovation. Maybe he doesn't. But Aristotle's innovation is that everything is not water. In fact, there are four elements. There's earth, fire, air, and water. And everything breaks down into those four elements.
Earth, fire, air, water.
Yes. The four elements.
The avatar. The elements can be bent.
Bent to your will if you're an avatar.
If you're an avatar. Or no, if you're just a bender.
Or a bender, yeah. Isn't it great that there are two franchises called Avatar and they are both themed around four elements?
Yeah. I don't know why he went with Avatar, James Cameron, when there was already such a popular IP with that name.
I think it's totally organic to the fact that Jake Sully mentally inhabits transfers to a Na'vi.
Yeah. No, I understand what an avatar is, but it's just there could have been many other names you could come up with that didn't step on another very popular IP. Not that it mattered, because now everybody, that 90% of people that hear Avatar think of the James Cameron movies.
Like Freaky Friday or something.
Yeah, Freaky
Friday Pandora.
Blues. Blues Clues.
Freaky Blues Clues.
I don't know. It could have been called Dances with Aliens.
Dances with Big Blue Aliens.
Big Blues.
Big Blues.
It's called What Would It Take for You to Bang an Alien?
Ten Things I Blew About You.
How to get a blue in
100 days.
Yeah.
All right.
How to bang a blue.
How to bang a blue, yeah. All right, so Aristotle, form and matter. But there's also an interesting question that Aristotle has to deal with, and that is this idea that suppose everything was air, fire, water, and earth. Could that come from nothing? Could that come into existence just from nothing? Aristotle says, no way, it can't come into existence from nothing. But then it would have to come into existence from something. But then wouldn't that just be another kind of matter?
And classic argument.
Classic problem, right? And so Aristotle appears to have a pretty cool solution to this problem.
All right, let's hear it.
Yeah, so before anything existed, nothing exists until there's no objects until matter has what Aristotle calls a form.
Mm-hmm.
Matter is nothing without form. It needs to have form or it doesn't exist. And so before anything existed, there was just form and matter, but they were separate from each other. And then
I don't even understand that. Form and matter. How is form something on its own?
It's not something, it's form.
Okay, but can form exist without matter? Just define form for me without the context of it being matter.
Okay, So form, this is not like Plato's form where it's like a universal eternal thing that gets realized in objects. So Plato, form is like the essence of something. So the essence of a brick is that it fits into a wall. So the form of a brick is that it could fit into a wall.
So it's basically the concept of something.
Sort of like that. Yeah, like or its purpose. That's another way to think of it. Because Aristotle thinks everything has a purpose. So for an organism, right? Like a human being, for Aristotle, the form of a human being is a rationally directed life. And the matter of a human being is all the organs that make up the body.
Right. Okay. Does that make sense? So the form is the purpose or the concept, basically. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Correct. And the matter is the stuff, the air, wind, fire, water, whatever.
Right.
But it's not like everything's on fire. So that's what he's got, this idea that it's not that things come into existence from nothing. Things come into existence when form and matter combine.
Right.
So
where does form come from?
Right. Very good question.
This is what I'm having trouble wrapping my head around, is how can something have form
without the idea of... Think of it kind of like Big Bang. Think like the Big Bang, right? Like atoms and stuff, dude, like a planet doesn't exist before the Big Bang, but it exists after the Big Bang. So what existed before the Big Bang is just a question that maybe doesn't make sense, because nothing really existed know it.
I thought, okay, this is the thing with the before the Big Bang thing, is that it was no time before the Big Bang. Was there?
It depends on if you think there can be time without change. If you think things can change over, if you think that with no, but it's also, it has to do with space. Time and space are fundamentally related. So before the Big Bang, if there's no space, then there's also no time. Yeah.
Right. Because I think, doesn't the expansion of space, isn't that linked to the progression of time as well?
Yes. Because when you have space, you have distance.
Mm-hmm.
And when you have distance, you have a time that it would take to move between the distances.
Right.
So as soon as there's space, you have time as well. But again, like form and matter, we can't even, it's, almost you can't comprehend them being separate from each other.
Right.
So I feel like this is kind of like this form and matter, and like, what were they before they come together, is like, conceptually, it you just can't even go there. It's weird.
Hmm.
Maybe that's a problem. I don't know.
Yeah. It's like I think we were talking about last week, maybe, or something, some other week, or maybe there's someone else talking about this, but like, our brains just aren't built to grasp that type of thing.
It could be, or it could be Aristotle's just full of shit, or maybe the Greek translation isn't good, or maybe I'm an idiot.
It could be all three of those. Yeah. It's definitely one of them.
One of the above. Okay. So, man, what else have we got here? Okay, so let's like pull back a minute and think about objects. So we know that objects have to be some sort of combination of form and matter, something like that. Maybe we can figure out what that means. But Aristotle thinks if you want to understand what an object is, there's four questions you need to ask about it. And these are related to its form and its matter.
Okay.
So the first question Aristotle would want to know is, what are the parts? So for a human being, the parts are the organs. For a house, the parts are the bricks. Everything's made of bricks for Aristotle. The whole is the organism, is the whole thing. or the house is the whole thing. And then the next question is, what caused it to exist? So for an organism, the thing that caused it to exist would be birth.
Right.
And then for a house, it would just be the construction. And then the final question is the most about the form. And that's like, what is this thing going to do? What's its purpose? What is it going to cause to happen?
Okay.
For a human being, it's going to have a rationally directed life. Hopefully.
Hopefully.
For a house, it's going to provide shelter.
Right.
Yeah. So pretty simple, right?
Mm-hmm.
Not too complicated.
Nothing too complicated here yet, but something tells me it's going to get confusing as hell.
Yeah, it's right now. It gets confusing as hell, right? Exactly. Oh,
immediately.
Now.
Okay, perfect. So good. I love that. I just get to feel like I understand something before I realize I don't.
Yeah, so there's like there suddenly becomes one of these like infinite regress problems that so often comes up in philosophy, right? So everything has to have matter and form. So take the brick. The brick is like the form. Like when we say a brick, that's the form. The matter is the fired clay. Right?
Right. So the fired clay was meant, its purpose is to become a brick.
Yeah, the fired clay is also a form. And right. What's the matter of the fired clay?
Well, it would be the clay molecules and the fire.
Yeah, like mud, basically, that you just dig out of the ground. But then the mud is also a form because it is composed of matter.
But what would it
form
be? Which
is all the random shit in the mud, it's what all those little things that make up the mud, that's what they become mud.
But mud can
exist.
The mud's
purpose is to become bricks and clay. The mud is to become clay, which is to become a brick, which is to become a house.
Right. But first of all, I think mud and clay are different things. But basically, I guess you find clay in the mud. But my point is that mud can just exist without doing anything.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. Like, it's not like an organism that has it's not like a life form that has
a purpose. Doesn't have, like, mud can just stay in one place with doing nothing its entire existence.
Yeah. Yeah. For Aristotle, the things that most properly have a form are organisms and living things or things that organisms make, like tools.
Right.
So, and you can do this with a person too, right? Like the human's life is their form. The body is their matter. The body is the form. The organs and the bones are the matter. The organs and the bones are the form. The cells are the matter. The cells are the form. The organelles, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. It goes right back down to like electrons.
Yes. So yeah, exactly. So Aristotle basically says you keep doing this. Eventually you always get to air, fire, water, earth. Eventually.
What is earth? Earth is like not a, like that seems to be
like
rather
rocks and dirt and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, I know. But like, those are two separate things really. There's a lot of different types of ground.
That's true.
Different, you know, you got granite is definitely different than clay, and those are both earth.
Yeah, they're
or is earth only considered the soft stuff? Like is a boulder considered earth? It's found in the earth.
A boulder is earth, yeah. It's earth, all right. Okay. Of the earth. I think that would count as earth. Like a rock.
Bricks, I would think that earth would be like anything that you can grow stuff. You know? Mm. Like rocks are just, they're found in the earth, but they're separate. When I say grab a handful of the earth, most people would think of grabbing like some dirt or soil or something.
Yeah, that's a good point. Because rocks are not organic, but dirt is organic.
yes, it has organic stuff in it. But at the end of the day, if we're talking about the Earth, if we're describing Earth as the Earth, then at its core, it's like a ball of iron.
Yeah. I mean, Aristotle was aware of metal and stuff like that. But he wasn't aware, like, I think they didn't have the same scientific vocabulary that we do, where we know that things are composed of electrons and stuff and atoms and molecules.
Well, if they did have that knowledge and they still were going with the earth, fire, wind, and water theory, then they are, that's a pretty weird thing to go for.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of feel like I get it a little bit, like fire, earth. Okay, maybe by earth he means rocks. So like, if you say like fire, rocks, wind, and water, those are the things that you can't really change them into other things.
You can't really reduce them down.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not really true, because like, well, I guess fire is a hard one to describe. Like, is fire a gas? What is fire? Fire is the destruction of a gas. Fire is the incineration of oxygen and fuel, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like you can't just conjure up fire out of nothing. So fire can't exist on its own.
Yeah, they would probably think like, oh, you burn something, you're releasing the element. The fire.
Right. Yeah. So would that mean that, wouldn't that lead you to believe that fire exists inside of a chunk of wood?
I'm sure Aristotle has written about that exact thing. That seems like exactly the thing you would write about.
Right. Because like, after you burn a piece of wood, it's not like all of it's gone. A lot of it has disappeared, but you're left with a chunk of coal or whatever you would call it, carbon.
Carbon.
You're left with a chunk of carbon.
Does carbon count as earth?
I mean, I know that carbon is essential for life, lots of people think.
Yeah.
But if you think the fire exists outside of anything else, it can exist on its own, then wouldn't you think that the fire was released from an object when you burn it? Mm-hmm. And it was always inside there? Or was it occurring as a separate thing? I mean, like...
Well, I mean, you literally are releasing energy from it. Yeah, that is literally what you're doing.
But...
So there is energy. Matter is energy. And energy is released when matter undergoes chemical change.
But you need matter for fire to exist. It can't exist outside of matter.
Right, right. Yeah, unless it's spiritual fire.
And you need oxygen. So you can't, even if you had a chunk of log in a vacuum, you will never be able to burn it.
Depends. I think you can have fires without oxygen.
No, thermite. You can't.
Thermite?
Oh, that's a chemical reaction, though, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
I guess they're both chemical reactions.
Yeah, it's not really a flame.
We are so out of our depth here. But I'm pretty sure you can't have fire in space.
Yeah, well, the sun's on fire, right?
That's insane. I mean, that's true. That's a little bit more advanced than your typical wood fire.
But even that, that's like fusion and plasma. It's not fire.
It's not really fire. I mean, I'm sure if you got close to it, you would light on fire, but I don't know if you like you wouldn't be able to put out the sun even if you had a sun-sized ball of water.
No.
Or could you? I don't fucking know. Could you?
If you had a giant ball of water the same size as the sun and you shot it at the sun out of a squirt gun,
would it extinguish the sun? I don't think it would.
That's a lot of water.
It's a lot of water, but I think that fire, what we consider the fire of the sun, is operating on a different pay grade than your regular campfire.
Yeah, it's a slightly different ballpark.
Yeah, they're both hot.
They're both hot.
Yeah.
Don't touch.
Yeah.
Look, but don't even look, actually, at one of them.
If you had enough water, could you put out the sun? That's a good question. Question of the week.
I feel like you would. No. Actually, you know what? That would be like, I think that would just be like pouring water on a grease fire.
You think so?
The heat of the sun would split all the hydrogen off of all the oxygen, and it would just be more fusion power for the sun. It might blow up the sun, if anything.
That would, I would consider that putting it out.
Okay. Well, it would leave behind the core, which would, I don't know. That's an interesting question.
Yeah.
We should write that into Neil.
If only MythBusters was still around.
Yeah, Kurzgesagt maybe would do that one.
Kurzgesagt could do that for sure. Yeah. Well, maybe we'll write in. If only we still had a working email, we could get our probably millions of listeners to. I like to think we have millions of listeners and we just aren't aware of it.
Yeah, I like to think that.
They're not a very vulnerable. They're a bunch of shy people. They don't tend to reach out.
Yeah.
But yeah. Fucking, could you put the sun out if you had a big enough ball of water? I think the answer is no.
Yeah, I think definitely no.
First of all, okay, I don't even know why I didn't think of this until now. That there's no way you're getting water near the sun without it evaporating.
Yeah, that's one of the main problems is as it gets closer, it'll just evaporate and
it'll just become
get sucked
vapor
into the sun and become more fuel for the fusion.
Yeah, all right, dumb question.
You'd have to have it teleport. You'd have to like superimpose it right onto the sun somehow.
Yeah, it would have to appear one to one where the sun's location is immediately.
And that requires like a whole nother level of know-how.
Well, yeah, that's above our pay grade for sure. Yeah.
Even NASA might not know how to do that.
Yeah, even Neil deGrasse Tyson hasn't figured that one out.
It's head scratcher. Yep.
Okay, but I think we've definitely. I think I feel ashamed that we wondered so long if it was possible. When
that's a good question.
Clearly impossible.
We might need to know someday. We might need to put out the sun someday. You never know.
Yeah, I mean, what could get into the sun without vaporizing immediately? That's
black holes.
Yeah.
Miniature black holes. Yeah.
Maybe that's what we need to invent. That'll replace fire extinguishers. You shoot a little black hole
at the fire.
At the fire. One day in the future, people will carry around miniature black holes like it's pepper spray. Just throw it at someone that's attacking you. They just get sucked in chest first.
Amazing. All right. Okay. So there's one last little point on this Aristotle stuff. And this is how do the elements change into each other, right? Because they have to be able to combine and change into each other in order to make more complex things. So Aristotle has this cool thing where the elements are made up of what he calls fundamental pairs of opposites, hot, cold, and wet, dry.
That's two good examples.
Right. So air and earth are dry. Sometimes. Okay, Some of them are one and some of them are the other. Fire is hot, water is cold.
I mean, maybe anything without water is going to be dry. So.
Yeah, that's true. So they can change into one another by switching these fundamental pairs, I guess, is how it goes. And when they change, so here's like an interesting maybe problem. And I'm not sure if Aristotle had this view or not. This may be the author's view. And the author's name is Thomas Ainsworth. And so they say that when these elements change, according to Aristotle's theory of change, when something changes, part of it must stay the same. And the other, and part of it changes.
Mm-hmm.
So for example, say like a deer or like a buck grows a pair of antlers.
Yeah.
It's gained there's been a change to its property where it's gained antlers, but the substance is still the same. It's still the same buck. But now it has a new pair of antlers, according to Aristotle.
Right.
So the organism, the substance, is still there, but part of it has changed. But the substrate is still there. Does that make sense?
Oh, it's still a deer.
It's still a deer. It's still a deer. But now it has antlers.
Uh-huh.
So part of it changed, but part of it has to stay the same.
Mm-hmm.
Or else it's not like a proper change.
Is there any other examples we can use? Because I feel like that one's not great. If we're talking about the changing of elements or the complexity of things, like, is there something? Okay, keep going.
No, it's okay. So maybe like another example, suppose you paint a car, mm-hmm. right? It's still a car, but you've painted it. So something stayed the same throughout the change.
Right. And that's, what is he trying to describe here? This is how you get complexity out of the four basic elements.
Well, this is actually how there is a slight problem with the idea of combining of the elements changing into one another. And the slight problem is that suppose you have some air, all right, for example, and you change it into fire. Well, it has changed. So there's been a change. The air has become fire.
Yeah.
But according to Aristotle, there also must be something there that stayed the same. But it can't be either of the elements. Right? The air isn't the same, and now it's fire.
Fire and air do have some similar properties. As in,
can be hot, cold.
They can be hot. Fire can't be cold.
Fire can't be cold. Uh-oh.
But you can, my point is, you can, you know, they're both gas.
Okay.
Well, I mean, fire is the incineration of air, right?
I don't know. I don't know, man.
They both get they're both affected by pressure changes, right?
Don't think of it like you think of fire and air. Think of it like the Avatar elements.
Okay.
Where they're different from each other.
Okay. They're not connected at all. They can exist. I mean, air can
exist. They're connected. They're connected, but they are their own thing. They're the
thing is, air can exist without fire. Fire cannot exist without air.
Maybe. Aristotle didn't know that.
Okay.
Maybe
their version of fire, maybe they're thinking of like this, the fires of Olympus type fire, like a sun fire. They're not thinking about fire that requires, you know, wood.
I mean, I don't know. I don't know what he's thinking about these, but I do know that when the elements change into each other, according to his theory of how things change, there must be some underlying substrate that persists.
Okay, so what would it be in his example between fire and air?
Yeah, let's take water, right? So Thomas Ainsworth, the author, is using water for his example. So he says, suppose water changes into some air. There must be some, right, through evaporation. There must be something underlying, some substrate, which persists through the change. Initially having the essential properties of water, being wet and cold, and then later, those of air, being wet and hot, according to Aristotle.
So,
so what is this thing?
The thing that water and air both share is the oxygen molecule.
True. That's a good point.
They probably both share hydrogen too, right? Air doesn't necessarily only mean oxygen.
No, air is a mix. Of course, Aristotle didn't know that, but it's a mix. Mm. Yeah, it's a mix of gases.
So basically, you changed the state of it, obviously, from a liquid to a gas. But what would be the substrate? It's the same thing. Air is basically water, is it not? separate from each other. From hydrogen.
Yeah, I think you're saying some things here that make sense, right? So,
Oh, thank God.
And so Thomas Ainsworth here, he says that the thing that underlies the change cannot be any of the elements because it must be capable of possessing the properties characteristic of each of the elements at once. It's got to be first. It's got to be cold. Then it's got to be hot.
Well, what is condensation? That's just air returning back to the water state.
Yeah, exactly. That's air becoming water.
Mm-hmm.
So for Aristotle, air is dry and hot. Air is wet and hot. And now it's becoming something wet and cold.
What do you think about hot water?
I don't know. I need to read about this.
I mean, if you heat water enough, it becomes air. So he's not.
I feel like it's a weird translation of hot or something.
Lost in translation here.
I think so. But anyway, so there's an interpretation of Aristotle. And that is that there is something called prime. And this is from St. Augustine. Oh, my God. And accepted by Thomas Aquinas. And Aristotle believes in something called prime matter.
Mm-hmm.
Thomas Ainsworth says this is the matter of the elements. It's like a, quote, pure potentiality.
All right. Mm-hmm.
Very interesting. So what is pure potentiality? It's capable of, quote, taking on any form whatsoever, and thus is completely without any essential properties of its own. It exists eternally, since if it were capable of being created or destroyed, there would have to be some even lower matter to underlie those changes.
Isn't this kind of what they thought the, this is a me, I don't know why I keep saying I'm out of my depth. That's the whole point of this, is I don't know what the hell I'm talking about, but isn't that like the Higgs boson?
No, it's not like the Higgs boson, but it is reminiscent of quantum field.
Okay, because I thought the Higgs boson gave things mass.
I don't know if it's that simple with the Higgs boson, but
probably not, but. I thought that's what the takeaway was from the Higgs boson, was that if the Higgs boson didn't exist, then we wouldn't be able to have matter.
That's what it says on Google, but I feel like if they figured out gravity, they would have said so a little bit more clearly.
Well, I don't know if it actually has anything to do with gravity. Does it? I mean, mass and gravity.
Something to do with mass. Yeah. Oh, maybe, yeah, okay, mass and gravity related. But anyway.
What is the Higgs boson in simple terms? Here we go. This is from me right here.
Okay.
A fundamental particle is obsessed with the Higgs field, a field that gives mass to other fundamental particles such as electrons and quarks. Okay, so it is a field, kind of what you were describing before.
Yeah, what I was thinking was there's like this theory that underlying all matter is like this quantum field, and things bubble up from the quantum field.
I don't know anything about that. Surprise, surprise.
Yeah. Well, it's like, it's so strange, but I think it's basically the ideas, the Big Bang, it's like a counter theory to the Big Bang or something, but basically bits of matter are popping into existence randomly all the time.
Right.
Seemingly from nothing, but actually from this quantum field thing. I wish I could remember the proper name for it. But it seems similar. It seems kind of similar to that, in that it's like beneath the most basic kind of matter, there's like a prime thing that,
right? So he was on the right track with that line of thinking.
Yeah, I think so. Well, I mean, I think he was very much on the right track with the idea that, like, you break matter down, you can break it down into elements, more basic elements, and then those elements are themselves composed of like these characteristics,
right?
That even atoms, as we know, are like protons, can be broken down into quarks and things.
Quarks and electrons. What's the smallest thing? Is it a quark? No, because there's bosons, right?
No, bosons are quite large, I think. I think quarks are the smallest.
Is that a particle we're talking about?
No.
Quarks and leptons.
Quarks and leptons, they make particles, and they have different spins that they can be in.
Oh my God. Eventually, people are just going to have to give up on discovering shit. A self-imposed dark age for a bit. just give the scientists a break.
Man, they're getting close. They're getting close
to a unified theory of everything.
No, I don't think that. But
well, that's the main goal, right? That's the holy grail of physics, is the unified theory, right?
I mean, just forget about it. Like, that's not going to happen.
That's what I'm saying. We got to give these guys a break.
How could you possibly claim to have a unified theory of physics when you've barely opened the door to the universe?
Well, there's some. They wouldn't have opened that door if they weren't looking for it, right?
I mean, no, that's the thing, right? Like, in our lifetime, unified theory of everything, they don't even know what black holes are. They don't know how gravity works. They don't understand. They don't know if string theory is right or wrong.
They don't have any idea how gravity works.
They have an idea, but I mean, people don't agree. Is it a force or is it not a force? There's a lot of mysteries still in physics. There's like a whole controversy right now that physics is like stagnating, but
yeah,
I don't know if that's true.
I was listening to Joe Rogan, which I don't typically do.
Well, don't listen to him about that.
No, it wasn't. It was his guest, and his guest was saying that everybody's got so caught up in string theory, and you get crucified if you suggest any other thing. He was saying that people have gone down the wrong path for too long chasing string theory. Maybe. But I don't fucking know.
A lot of his guests are.
I know. They're always on the fringe because they're practically insane half the time.
Yeah. I mean, eventually, right, you need a Copernican revolution sometimes.
Yeah.
But the Copernican revolution doesn't come about because people feel like things are stagnating. It comes about because people have a correct interpretation of the data. Hmm.
So you think that there's a piece missing still that has yet to be discovered that will launch a new era of advancement?
I don't know about that. I just think that there's so much more to like physics that hasn't been studied because you just can't study so many different things on Earth. Like the way matter behaves in these like cataclysmic events in space. I mean, you can't study it here, right? So you don't really understand what's possible.
Well, I mean, the Hadron Collider is kind of what they're trying to do that.
That's true. Right? That's true. Yes.
I mean, they'll never get the same exact conditions that you would get on the inside of a neutron star, but they can make maybe a miniature. You're right. They won't be able to do the right experiments to really apply their way to the base foundation of what physics is.
Yeah, exactly. Like they don't know they don't know how far the periodic chart can go, for example. You don't know what kind of elements you could make, what sort of weird properties they could have. There's all sorts of stuff that I think that nobody knows anything about. So I don't know. I think that's why I am always like, if anyone says, oh, I have a unified theory of everything, it's like, oh, okay, how did you have time to do that?
How did you have time to do that? Okay, well, anyone listening, maybe you should put some time into that. If we all think of it for a bit, 5 minutes a day, we all work on that, I think we'll have it solved by next week and we can write it to our non-existent email. So we'll talk to you never because we don't need, we'll talk to the listeners we know in person. And that's our episode.
All right. Air, earth, fire, water, heed my call. Goodbye.
There you go.